And for whatever reason, I remember every single one of them says, "What will you sign for?" And I'm looking around like, I'm a Division II senior. Like, what do you want me to put? $1 million? And I remember I just, on every single one, I put anything.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today we're talking with Zach Kelly, currently a right-hander for the Red Sox who broke into the show for the first time this year. Typically on the show, we talk to guys who have wrapped up their careers, kind of looking back as a retrospective. Zach has such an incredible story, he's already lived a career's worth of ups and downs, and he's just now heading into his age 28 season. We talk about his college career at two separate Division II schools, why he made a decision to transfer, and how he managed to stand out to pro scouts despite that small setting. We talk about signing as an undrafted free agent for a whopping $500 before taxes, starting a journey that included two releases, an elbow injury, and time spent bouncing from affiliate to affiliate as depth before emerging as a legitimate bullpen prospect for the Red Sox. On a personal note, when I was 22, I played on a college summer ball team in the Carolina Virginia League called the Roanoke Rails. I know the Rails are now defunct. I'm not sure about the league. On that team, we had a couple high school kids, including an 18-year-old Zach Kelly, about to head to his Division II school, which I had never heard of. It is incredible for me to think that 10 years later, he is heading into a spring training where he could be a legitimate bullpen piece for a major league team. It's been awesome to see the success, and truly an incredible story, incredible just look at what persevering can do for someone and what believing in yourself and not having a plan B. So I was thrilled to have him on the show, thrilled to see his success. I hope everyone enjoys it as well. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. The handbook's coming soon. Spring training's coming soon. College baseball is about to start. Always a good time to subscribe to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Zach Kelly. All right, joining in for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm, he was an undrafted free agent by the A's in 2017 out of Newberry College. Current big league right-hander for the Red Sox, Zach Kelly. Zach, thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Kyle, thanks. I appreciate it.
I've been looking forward to this a lot, and I'm happy for your success. I'm thrilled that you've made it. And like, you know, you spent 2 months playing with me. You know, two and a half months playing with me when you were 18 and I was 22. How much would you credit like reaching the big leagues to that 2 months? Like, would you say 50%? Is that too low? Is it more like 70? Could it be 90? Like, how would you gauge that?
Little do you know, my first like college baseball tip came from Kyle Bandujo. I'm sitting there. I remember.
What was that?
I'm sitting there on deck, and some kid hit a foul ball like back to the screen, and I was standing there. You're like, "Hey, you got to go get the ball." I'm like, "We didn't do this in high school. I didn't know this, but yeah." So every time after that, for the rest of probably my 30 at bats after that, before I retired from hitting, that was you right there.
Passing wisdom. So, I mean, that tip right there alone gets you.
It's probably worth 95%. Yeah.
At least. I'll look for that. I'll look for that check at the mail. But let's go back to around that time. You were obviously, man, like setting up the stage. You're currently going. Most of the guys we have on the show are, have wrapped it on up. And, you know, you're a pretty unique case. We've had some guys who've been undrafted free agents. We've had D2, D3 guys on the show. But with you, and as you're getting into high school, you were a tall guy. You had a live arm. I'm pretty sure when I met you, you weighed 120 pounds. What were your aspirations getting to the next level as you got into that junior senior year of high school? Like, what kind of ceiling did you have on yourself at that time?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody, you know, when they first start thinking, where like it's a reality that they can probably play baseball at the next level, it's, you know, you want to go to that Division I school. You want to go, like in Virginia, it's like you want to go to Tech, you want to go to UVA. And the longer you get into like the whole recruiting process, sometimes you slowly start to realize more and more that it's probably not, you know, a likely outcome. And so, I mean, I wouldn't say like I was, you know, the guy who was always in the gym, because I didn't really touch a weight until college. And so, like, baseball is just something that I did. I didn't, like, looking back, obviously, I would like to have probably put a little bit more time, a little bit more work in, but I just viewed it as a hobby and not really something that I was going to end up doing for the next 10 plus years of my life. And so I did the whole showcase scene. After my junior year of high school, I went down and played with the Dirtbags out of North Carolina, which was a really good experience. Got to play a lot of different places and meet a lot of new guys that I was used to playing with. And then just a couple camps here and there. And slowly, like, I started to realize, like, going to some of these, like, maybe I'm not, you know, as good as I think I am. Like the ceiling is there. Like, I felt like a lot of the coaches that I reached out to was like, yeah, like, we like your stuff, you're projectable, but you're just not there yet. And so I hate that word, is projectability, because you can never really tell, like, who's to say this kid's, you know, going to grow 6 inches. He may not. He might end up throwing 95, or he may not. And so going to that, I got a couple of interests from a couple of Division II schools, and the Division III scene in the state of Virginia is very, very high as a,
yeah,
the conferences.
Yeah, America. That's something I noticed. That was something I was going to ask on, in that in Virginia, it seems like if you don't go to one of the big schools, then you're next. There's not a lot of D2 scene there, like there is here in Texas where I am, that it seemed like we're going to go hyper niche, you know, Virginia college athletics, yeah, content, but like, there's the ODAC conference with the, you know, kind of D3, a lot of private schools, with, you know, with nice campuses, but like, everyone, you know, most of the guys we played with when we played summer ball together who were from Virginia kind of defaulted to those schools. If you're not going big, you go into the ODAC. And I was curious as to what, you know, cause I remember when you said you were going to Concord, where you first went, I was like, oh, cool. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. And cause I really didn't want to go, like, it's not so much like it was Division III. I didn't really care. Cause I mean, you look at the ODAC now, like you just said, there's probably 3 or 4 teams that are consistently in the top 25, and a couple of those are in the top 10. So, I mean, it's good baseball. And like you said, it's in Virginia, it's really D1 or D3 if you want to stay in state. And so the competition level is really high. But as opposed to where I'm at in South Carolina, there's not a single Division III school. You obviously have your D1s in Clemson, South Carolina, and a couple others, but there's 3 or 4 junior colleges, and there's D2 schools here that range in, I think, 3 different conferences. And so it's just a completely different landscape up there than it is here. And so it wasn't so much, like I said, that I didn't want to go D3. It was, I kind of wanted to get out of Virginia a little bit. And so I thought, my thought process was, if I go try to play for the Dirtbags down in North Carolina, I can get some interest from a couple of those schools. And there's a lot of D1s and D2s down there. And I got interest. I had an offer from North Carolina Central. I had an offer after I committed to Concord from Richmond University. But ultimately, what it came down to at Concord was the money as far as academic. And I got a lot of academic money to go there. And so add that on top of the baseball money, and I really wasn't paying that much to go there. And at the time, there was an understanding that I was going to have an opportunity to be a hitter and a pitcher, which I really wanted to do, because at the time I thought I was a better hitter than I was a pitcher. I just kind of threw in high school. I didn't really pitch, but hitting was always something that I was like really, really passionate about and felt like I was pretty good at.
So like I mentioned earlier, after your senior year of high school, you come and play in a college summer ball league. We, you know, you and I are on the same team, and most of our team, aside from, I think, 2 guys, were either D2, D3 guys, and then you and another high schooler. When you have an experience like that, I'm not trying to really relive the glory days here. I'm kind of curious. You spend a summer with guys who are living the life that you're about to go live. They're at a smaller school, at a place. I would say everyone that we played with on that team, aside from, say, shout out Trent Cundiff, who went to JMU. Probably went to a school that I wouldn't have chosen to go to had I not playing baseball, including my own. I would have gone somewhere else, yeah, as opposed to where I went if I didn't want to play baseball. You have that kind of test run and hear us talk about what things are like. You know, I'm sure we had a lot of conversations in the dugout about like things that suck when you go to a small school. So was that, did that summer make you more or less excited? Cause, and you're also, you're going out of state. Like you have to really want to do that if you're leaving your comfort zone and heading down to this small school.
Yeah, it did. Just like my case, and like Will, we're the only two high school kids, and he was going off to play at UVA Wise, another small school. And so not necessarily like, is it an excitement level kind of thing, but more so less like, it's almost like a trial run of what to expect competition wise and just, you know, seeing how guys play. Cause like we were 18 years old, and we've been playing high school baseball for the last 4 years now. All of a sudden, we're sitting here playing every weekend against guys that are 3 or 4 years older than us. That's something that we've never done before. And so I think a lot of the freshmen that I ended up enrolling at Concord with, they didn't have that experience. And so I felt like I was a little bit more prepared going in. Not just saying like I was prepared talent-wise because I played in a summer ball league the summer before, but like I knew what to expect a little bit before everybody else kind of got that first dose of, you know, this is college. I was able to get that in June instead of September.
Yeah, I think when you put it that way, it's actually a valuable experience spending your time around a bunch of literal dirt bags for 2 months. So you get to Concord, and early on in your career, you have success. You're second team all conference performer. You get those innings you're looking for, things like that. When you go to a place and you know the on field stuff is working out for the most part, it's different now even than it was then. It wasn't like you were in college that long ago, but it's different now as far as transferring. But when did you, and what factors went into deciding, okay, you know, there might be a different place for me, a place I need to move on to?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. I went there and I got exactly what I wanted to get out of it. After my sophomore year, I was at 100 innings. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to go somewhere and play. I didn't want to go somewhere, you know, that I probably wasn't going to play much, just to have, you know, a couple t-shirts to kind of wear back at home on Christmas break. And it's like, I wanted to go somewhere where I could play and have a good time. And, you know, at some point throughout my sophomore year, I came to like a understanding that this was going to be my last year there. We had a great head coach, loved him. It's actually crazy that he just took a job now the Red Sox minor league field coordinator, which is completely insane to me. And at the, like, I remember going into that meeting and like, I had so much respect and love for him that I was like just upset. Because I felt like I was letting him down. But I just, at some point I realized throughout that my sophomore year that just seeing guys that we would play, and it's like, you know, you talk to guys and you hear like, oh, so-and-so is, you know, he's getting looked at by X professional team. It's like, and I'm looking, I'm like, I don't think I'm like too far off like what this guy's doing. I think I'm pretty doggone close to that. And so it's like, it makes you wonder that if professional baseball is an opportunity that I want to like try to pursue, it came down to, is this going to happen here? Or is it better off? Like, is there a better chance it's going to happen somewhere else? And so once I kind of understood that, I threw my chips all in. I called my dad and I said, hey, I'm leaving. And my parents didn't try to talk me out of it. They said, you know, you made decisions for yourself up to this point and you haven't really steered yourself wrong yet. So, you know, whatever you want to do is we'll support you. We'll do whatever we need to do. But if that's what you want to do, then you need to think about it really hard and then go through with it. So I did. And I just didn't feel like the level of competition, the weather, and, you know, I mean, we're in West Virginia, right? And we're playing our conferences, West Virginia up to Pennsylvania. No scout is going to come sit through a snowstorm in April and where it's 35 degrees to scout anybody.
Even your parents don't want to come sit through that.
Nobody. I remember my sophomore year, we started, we had an opening weekend against Pitt Johnstown. I don't know if you've ever heard of that team, but that's Division II for you. But I remember that we got 8 inches of snow on a Tuesday, and we shoveled snow on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, until we played on Saturday. Our pitchers got 1 hour of practice and our hitters got 1 hour of practice. So we shoveled snow the whole week with 1 hour of practice just to play. And we did. But like that's what we dealt with. It was stuff like that. And I didn't think that was the best place that I was going to develop and pursue a professional career.
And I think there's a conception around kids who are in high school or in college right now, could be listening to this, whatever, just parents of kids, whoever, that, you know, you're talking about transferring, wanting to build a better opportunity for yourself to potentially go into pro ball, showcase what you do. You didn't go to Virginia Tech or Clemson. Like, you didn't transfer to a big name. And I think there's a conception of you've got to be in the brightest of lights to get seen. And I think especially now, you know, with what video is and with that you can look at someone's especially as a pitcher, you can look at someone's metrics and say, okay, that's pro stuff, that there are places to get seen. Otherwise, it still don't have to be the SEC or the ACC. You worked into Newberry College and transitioned that into professional baseball. What made that the choice, and why was that retrospectively the right choice for you?
Yeah, like you said, talking like if there's any parents and kids like that are watching this or listening, I've done quite a few lessons in my day over the last couple off seasons, and like parents will ask me about recruiting a lot, and that's what I tell them, not just because this is my case, but because I truly believe it is. There's no like, is it easier to get seen at a Division I school than a Division II? Of course, like obviously, but is. You need to go where you can play and where you can get experience. Like, you're way better off to go. Like if I would have went to Virginia Tech, let's say I redshirted my freshman year, sophomore year, I threw 30 innings with a 3.5. Having 100 innings over 2 years with that, you can have the same ERA, whatever, is more beneficial for you than, you know, sitting out a year and then not playing as much. And so it's not always about going to the biggest school with the biggest name, but it's where are you going to be able to get the most experience? I think we've kind of gotten away from that from a recruiting standpoint, that we kind of encourage the big name schools, which I'd like to, you know, at some point for to kind of transition back to what it used to be. But
I would say also, it's just like you only get one chance to do college and college baseball. For 90% of college baseball players, the last inning you play in college is going to be the last inning you play. Like, instead of investing in, I think, you know, this is going to be the place where I get seen or this is the biggest name. Like, you're doing this to have fun. Like, go find the field, go find it. Like, that's something I wish I would have done differently is like, doesn't matter where, like there are schools I could have played out a lot more than the one I did. And in retrospect, I maybe wish I would have explored that.
Yeah. If you're going to play college baseball, go play college baseball. Don't go play college, sit in the dugout for 3 years, go play baseball. But whenever I transfer, I don't know why I did it this way, but I did. So I was like, all right, well, this is really good. Like, cause I wasn't going to go to a D1 school because I didn't want to sit out. And this is way before you could go on the transfer portal 16 times a year and just be fine. So you could go D2 to D2 with no penalty. And so I was like, all right, well, the best division, I didn't want to go to Texas. It was a good D2 ball in Texas. I know. But I was like,
we had a spot for you, man. You should have called.
I figured the best Division II baseball is probably in South Carolina, Georgia, or Florida. And so I hopped on my laptop. I looked up the three conferences that were down here. It's the SAC, the Peach Belt, and the Sunshine State Conference. Pulled up every single one of their conference pages. I took the top half of each one. I looked to see what schools had my major. I made a list, and then I went through and saw how many guys out of their weekend rotation were leaving. And if there was more than two, if there was less than two, I crossed them off. If there was more than two, I called them. and about
that's science, baby. That's mathematics.
I probably ended up with, I think, three or four. I think my parents crossed off a couple of them that were with a little too far away from home. I remember I had one in West Palm Beach. It might have been Kaiser University, NAI, don't quote me on that, but they crossed that one off. It's like, we're not coming to West Palm Beach all the time, sorry.
That seems like, in retrospect, that seems like a mistake. Like, incentive to go to West Palm Beach. I know.
And hey, and my senior year, I won a national championship there too. Ultimately, I came down to, I think, three or four schools, and one of them didn't call me back. I think I was supposed, and two of them didn't call me back. Won't name names. But then I went on a visit to Newberry, and I think the following week I was supposed to go to, Barry University down in Miami. And I got to Newberry. I liked it. I said, nope, this is where I want to be. I like it here. This is, the campus is nice. The field is nice. The coaching staff love them. That's how I ended up at Newberry College.
You get to Newberry and you step right into that rotation. 14 starts your junior year, 12 starts your senior year, over 80 innings both years, good numbers both years. As you're in that, again, you know, we said that you can make it to the, you know, if you find somewhere to get seen, you can make it to the pros, whatever. Again, it is harder if you're putting up those numbers at Newberry than if you're putting up those numbers at Clemson. When did, as you're getting into your senior year of college, there's obviously a couple paths. You could graduate and join the working world. You could, you know, try to pursue baseball, and it's something that's not a given with your stature. How did you make those decisions, and how did you kind of evaluate, how do pro teams feel about me? What is my path? Should I go get an internship somewhere? Like, how do you make those decisions when nothing is a given?
Honestly, I probably not the best life advice, but I've always believed that if you have a plan B, you don't really think plan A is possible. And so once I kind of had that first pro day and I got a couple letters, it was like, this is plan A. And I don't have, like, there is no plan B. And if plan A wouldn't have worked out, then I would have figured it out. Then I would have made another plan A. Right. But, I didn't really, like, even my junior year, it wasn't like, oh, this is possible. Like, I had decent numbers, but it was just like, I felt like I stalled out velo wise from my senior year of high school until my junior year of college. Like, I feel like it was kind of like on that same plateau. There's nothing I could do. I tried getting stronger, tried tweaking mechanics every year. It's just like searching and searching, but never found anything. And then I pretty much had to beg my pitching coach to go play summer ball after my junior year, because a lot of it, like, which is weird, because I feel like in Virginia, where I grew up, it was like, so you play summer ball, right? Like, this is kind of what you do. But whenever I got to Newberry, talking to my teammates, they're like, you play summer ball? I'm like, yeah. So it was like a very foreign thing to go play in a league. I don't know if it was just because there's not really like a league in South Carolina like there is in Virginia and North Carolina that we're used to. But so I pretty much had to beg my pitching coach to play. And the only, like, the stipulation was you can only go if you have X number of innings, and I don't care if you hit that in the second month or the game before the playoffs, like, you're gone. And so I did that. I went and played for the Wilson Tobbs in the Coastal Plains League, which was a really good time. And then I got back to school and he said, all right, what I didn't tell you is that you're not going to be picking up a ball for a month. Like, you can lift and you can condition, do everything with the team, but you're not throwing for a month. So for me being me, like, I'm pissed off about that. I don't like it. But once I got over that, I was like, all right, what can I do in this month to get me in the best position possible? And I decided to sit there and lift every day. I was squatting and deadlifting almost every other day, just trying to get literally get as physically strong as I could. And so that month went by doing that. And then after probably a couple weeks of throwing, it was time to go to the mound. And I remember I had never hit 90 before. And my first pitch in the bullpen was 92. And I'm like, I didn't know this. And like at the time, right? But afterwards, like, do you know what you just did? I'm like, no. And like, they showed me the sheet. I'm just like, okay. I'm like, now we're working with something here, right? And so like, kind of from that point on is like, I realized like I could throw 90, 92. And so I tried to throw every pitch as hard as I could.
And you get to that point. So you have that velocity spike and, you know, 90, 92 isn't now what it used to be, but no. I mean, you know, that's still that threshold still exists. And like you have to, as a right-handed pitcher, especially a guy from a small school, you have got to throw a certain, it just is like 99% of guys need to throw at least with a certain velocity. So now you cross that threshold, becomes possible. You get, you know, you go undrafted. When we think free agency, we think about, you know, Carlos Correa, who was wanted by a lot of teams and, you know, things like that, like getting to kind of pick and choose, getting courted. What is being an undrafted free agent like? Do you feel like you're getting wined and dyed like the bell of the ball?
Yeah, not quite. And so like, it was weird because like in the fall of my senior year, we had a pro day and I got the questionnaires, and every questionnaire is pretty much the exact same questions to a T. And for whatever reason, I remember every single one of them says, "What will you sign for?" And I'm looking around like, I'm a Division II senior. Like, what do you want me to put? $1 million?
$1 million cash.
And I remember I just, on every single one, I put anything. I thought like going through my senior year that I was going to have a pretty good shot, because it was like the first couple of games, there was a lot of scouts there, because what Division II does do a really good job of is starting, I think 2 weeks before Division I does. And so It gives a lot of kids opportunities, like for me, especially just because I'm pitching on a Friday night and it's like, all right. I've said this before. It's like, if I'm a scout, am I going to go to Newberry College on a Friday night, or am I going to go down to South Carolina, or am I going to go to Clemson to watch an SEC or an SEC matchup? Like, come on. And so like those first 2 weeks, I had a couple decent amount of teams come out. And so, but I didn't really know like going through, cause no one talks to you and no one really does anything like that. And then after the season, I didn't have an agent. I don't know what an agent does at this point. Like all these kids now, they have agents in high school, like advisors in high school. I'm just like, come on, jeez. I don't know. But leading up to the draft, it was a couple teams were like, yeah, you know, you're a senior sign. I think a couple teams usually try to take their senior signs like 8, 9, and 10. And then a couple.
So you save that money.
Yeah. And then, so I thought from one team I had a pretty decent shot of doing that, but they ended up taking another guy from our conference. So a little irritated but with that one. But so it ends up being on draft day. Obviously I knew I wasn't going day one. The only really talk about day two that I had was like that one team that I just mentioned. But then day three, I remember I get a text from the scout with the A's. It's like, most of our seniors today are going to sign for $1,000. Is that okay? I'm like, I mean, what am I supposed to say? No. So yeah, that's fine. Whatever you want, dude. And you keep going and we keep going. And like, I did what you're not supposed to do and just sit there and watch the entire draft pick by pick.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah. But for 3 days, that's exactly what I did. Once it got to about the 30th, I'm like, I'm getting a little nervous, right? And then he texts me and like, hey, I think we're gonna get a couple high school guys. I pushed really hard for you. I'll call you after the draft. And I'm like, I'm pissed off. I'm upset because like, with knowing, like having all the interest, it's like, I wasn't really that upset after my last game because I didn't think it was going to be my last game. And so like, it's like the emotion of not getting drafted, the emotion of being done with baseball forever just hits me all at once, right? And it's not a good feeling to have. It's like I've done this for my entire life, and like all of a sudden in a split second that I thought it wasn't going to be over, it is. And then I remember he called me and was like, all right, here's the deal. I pushed for you. I get you a free agent deal for $500. You have to be out here in 3 days. Like, thank you. I'm pumped. I'm like, this is all I've ever wanted. Like, I don't care. You just let me know when I need to leave my house and I'll be there.
And how long did that $500 last you?
It lasted me about 3 hours. I got it was so funny after
you crazy bonus babies just spending all your money at once. Yeah,
and let me here's the problem now. So in 2017 there's 40 rounds, right? Post COVID gives everybody an excuse to change the draft, and now all these they have like limits on what you can pay free agents. It's like, oh yeah, I was non-drafted free agent too. I'm like, you got 20 grand. What do you mean? You're like you might as well be a top 10 pick. These seniors getting 20 grand. I'm like, come on. I could have done a lot more with 20 grand. But I took a picture of it, but I don't think I did. I don't remember where. I don't think I would have one, but my check was $323 after tax. And they didn't make us, like, we had these apartments that they set us up in for the AZL, but they didn't make us pay rent until everybody got their signing bonus checks in. And so as soon as like that day, like everybody walks out and there's a big whiteboard with the schedule for the day or right when you walk in or walk out. And it says $300 of rent due tomorrow. I'm like, all right, so now I got $23 left. And so I went to Applebee's that night and got a 2 for $20 for myself.
I mean, you gotta treat yourself in some way.
That's literally what I did with my professional baseball signing bonus. Let's get a Applebee's 2 for $20. I need to try to turn that into like an NIL deal, but I don't think that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that works for me right now. I think it's more college.
Yeah, I don't know. We need to amplify that story. So yeah, you start out the year good, and Applebee's comes calling. I will say though, you could. I guess there's no cookout in Scottsdale, but that's like four meals at cookout.
Dude, the amount of cookout versus In-N-Out arguments that I've had with people.
Wait, there are people arguing cookout versus In-N-Out? Those are like two, those aren't really on the same spectrum of what you're talking about though.
But it kind of is. It's like, there's really nowhere else on the East Coast you could compare it to.
Cookout is its own unique animal. Like I would, if they open a cookout by my house, I would buy new pants. I would say, like, we're going up two sizes. We're just gonna embrace this. Like, I miss cookout was one of the best parts about playing summer ball, Virginia. I miss cookout like I missed a long lost relative.
I don't know if all your listeners know what cookout is, but if you don't, I just want, if you're hearing this, just go look up cookout menu, and then you'll know what we're talking about. You can get
something for everybody.
You can get mix and match like the most random food, like actual food. And it's like $6.
You can have like your side for your meal is chicken fingers, like that's your side.
Yeah, and there's give and take. You're probably gonna gain 2 pounds, but it's worth it. It only costs you $6.
Yeah, it's a national treasure. So, anyways. You head down, you're in the AZL, you're playing pro ball. If you had to describe your illustrious long career with the Athletics in one sentence, how would you do that?
Disappointing.
So you go to the AZL, you get released pretty soon after spring training the next season. The next spring training is 2018. When you come in that scenario, does it feel like, you know, pitching at Newberry? Does it have the same intensity, or is it like does it feel more like a showcase, like tryout mode every time?
I mean, not really. It was just like I thought I threw the ball pretty well. I mean, I was already kind of gassed when I got out there for the AZL. I was already I threw a couple summer ball games in between the end of our my senior season and by the time the draft came around. So I was like 105 innings in. And so by no means like did I have my best stuff when I was out there, but everybody else was in the same boat, right? Everybody else is, you know, had been throwing for a long season, maybe not 105 innings, but you know, the point still applies. But I didn't really feel like I was like trying out. Like, honestly, it might have been blind, but I thought like, you know, they cared enough to, you know, to bring me in. They have plans for me, and you know, you slowly kind of realize like, I don't think they do.
You get so you get released after your first spring training. That period between getting released, getting signed by the Angels, you know, I think like 9 days later. When you're doing that, what are the range of emotions? What is the plan? Is this still plan A? Do you think, hey, this might be over? And at that point, you have gotten a couple months worth of this is how I stack up against, you know, old, you know, Johnny first round pick or reliever who's in AAA and stuff like that. Like you've gotten to stack yourself up. When you evaluated that, did it give you confidence of, oh no, I can absolutely do this? Or were you kind of like, you know, I'm already released. Yeah. Maybe I'm in trouble.
Yeah. And well, like the first thing was, it was like, I felt like there was such a learning curve when I got there, like not even just the fact of like, you know, the routine every day and trying to develop that, but like everything was so foreign to me. Like I remember one of the first couple of days we were there, it's like they're outside, we're like, yeah, you're gonna go in, you're gonna go throw your bullpen, you're gonna go condition, then you're gonna go inside and do arm care. I'm like, what are you talking about?
What is this arm care you speak of?
And like then you're like, yeah, just do all these exercises. I'm like, this is Chinese to me, because we didn't do any arm care at Newberry or Concord. It was like, I rarely even really knew what the training room was. Like, it's not, I mean, granted, this is, you know, almost 10 years ago. There's no, you know, driveline programs, there's no weighted ball programs, mm-hmm. or anything like that. So like it took me so long to kind of adjust to that. And I thought I did a pretty good job of doing it quickly. But after that first spring training, like even that, the first off season, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to train or to work out. And honestly, I might've went to the gym like two or three times a week because I didn't know how to prepare for a whole season. I just kind of did whatever I would do in college. And like when a break, you know, you go work out a couple of times, you show up that first weekend in January and now you just play. And apparently it didn't work like that in pro ball. and so I wasn't ready to go in camp, and I ended up getting a little banged up with my shoulder. And pretty much when I was coming back, I was a 23-year-old righty that was throwing 88 miles an hour, which didn't really do much for the organization. But after that, I knew I wanted, because like they kind of had me as being a reliever, and I thought I could start. That's all I've done my whole life. And I didn't want to waste the off season that I just had. And so I was literally on the way. I drove up from Columbia, South Carolina to Cincinnati to go to a Frontier League tryout. And literally within 10 minutes after passing the stadium on my way up there the day before the tryout, I get a random number from Tempe, Arizona. And it was Mike LaCosta. He was the farm director for the Angels, and was like, "Hey, we want to sign you. What are you doing? Where are you at?" And I was like, "Well, I'm in Cincinnati. I can be home tomorrow, and I can fly out a couple of days after that. Just let me know." And so, probably within 2 days, I was back out in Arizona, about 15 minutes from where I was the week before, just with a different team.
The stuff you're talking about, the training, the learning, the arm care and stuff, like your next off season after that, because you know, you play a full season in the Angels organization, you do well, you advance multiple levels and things like that. How do you cultivate a routine, and how do you learn what to do? Is there like a Baseball for Dummies book? Like what is this is how you be a professional baseball player, and this is how, you know, you've now gone through a full season. You know that grind. Where did you turn to figure out, I need to do something different with my body because what I did last time didn't work.
So it's the, I wanted to do it after my, like my, that first off season, but just literally couldn't afford it. There's a gym down here in South Carolina, a little hole in the wall CrossFit gym that a lot of baseball guys work out at, called Athletes Arena. We have guys like, Jordan Lyles, who is in, you know, year 12, I think.
He's made himself a good living.
Yeah. And they got Tyler Stevenson with the Reds, Grayson Griner just signed. And then, you know, Tyler Webb and Zach Golley, who've been in the big leagues for the last 5-6 years. And it's like, these guys know what they're doing. And so I went, I said, I want to be, this is what I want to do. I want to be a part of this. I mean, and it was not really, I probably couldn't really afford it at the time either, but I knew that this is what it was going to take. And looking back, when I got released from the A's, it was kind of a good thing. It kind of gave me like a little bit of a wake up call. It's like, if you're going to do this, you need to do this. You need to put in the time, you need to put in the work and actually, you know, pull through with this and go through. And so I've been doing that the last 5-6 years, or however many years it's been since my second off season, and being around those guys that every day that have done it longer than I have. And, you know, they were at the highest, they've been to the highest level while I was sitting there in A-ball. You know, it's 5 days a week. And so I think once I got that, it was like, all right, this is what it takes. This is, and you just learn so much from being around guys, right? You learn how they go about their bullpens. They learn how they go about their training, their conditioning. And so I think doing that was probably one of the best things that I've ever done in my career, was like making the commitment to start that, because if I wouldn't have started then, I probably wouldn't have ever done it.
You talk about the affordability aspect, though. It sounds like you had to make some financial sacrifices, stretch some bills, figure something out, just to invest in yourself and become better for your employer, who at that time was
right.
Was the Angels. Like what lengths did you have to go to make that work for yourself, to make that extra expense and investing in your own career?
Yeah, a lot. So what year is this? This will be 2018. My wife had just graduated from nursing school, and so she didn't start working as an actual nurse until probably December or January. So, you know, for the longest time, it's like, you know, we're sitting there like, she's kind of working some odd jobs. I'm kind of working some odd jobs. We, for whatever reason, thought it was a good idea to rent a house for $1,000 a month. I did a lot of lessons. It was like, that was really the only thing that I thought could give me the best opportunity to make quick money. Cause it's like, there's not really a lot of people that do lessons down here, surprisingly, because kids are playing year round. Right. So there's really is no off season where it's like they shut down and they go do lessons. They go train. It's a year round sport, but being able to put my name with a professional team that people recognize, just, you know, it mattered. It helps. And so I did that. I did that for probably three or four years. And it probably wasn't enough to get by comfortably, but it was enough to get by. I definitely had some help from my parents, from her parents. And it's like, it's just part of it, really.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
After that first season, with the first full year with the Angels in 2018, you pitch your way out of rookie ball. You pitch your way out of low. You pitch your way up into high A. 2019, you go back out to high A for a bit, and then you spend most of the year in double A. So you've advanced. Now you are not suddenly, undrafted free agent sign guy. You're in an age appropriate league, and pitching well. You've had these 2 years in pro ball. You figured out how to train yourself. You know, you've found an organization that's willing to keep you employed and showing trust in you to advance you quickly. When you look at, you said that in as you were getting out of high school, or whatever, you were kind of just a thrower. It's been like, at this point now, it's been 6 years. You're in double A. Did you have a definitive idea in your head of, this is who I am as a pitcher, this is the path that's going to get me to the big leagues? Like, did you have, by that point, had you formulated an identity that resembles the guy who pitched in the big leagues, this past season, or was that still a work in progress?
No, I still think it was a work in progress, because I'm the pitcher I was in 2019 and the pitcher I am now are just, light years away. But even that 2019, so like the order of teams that I played for in 18 and 19, like with the transaction report, it's not chronological. So I remember in 2018, they kept me in extended for a little bit, then they sent me to low A. They sent me back to Arizona after one outing to throw a live BP. They sent me to rookie ball for 2 weeks. They sent me to high A for about a month. And then they sent me back to low A for the last couple of weeks of the season. And then, the last day of camp the following year in 19, our pitching coordinator comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, you're going to double A." I'm like, "What? What do you mean? Like, I didn't really pitch very much, like, in high A. Like, are you lying to me? Are you sure?" He's like, "No, yeah, we have a spot for you and you're going to double A, man." I'm like, "Okay." And all right, you're going to double A. I'm like, part of me is like, because at this point, like, there's been so many different things that have happened to me in my career. It's just like, I'm able to see through a lot of stuff. And so with me going to double A, essentially more or less skipping high A as a non-drafted free agent, I'm like, this doesn't really happen very often, right? So I was like, I felt like there was a catch. And so we go to double A in 19, and the year before in 18 at the big league level, the Angels had a lot of injuries, to the pitchers. And so they tried this different thing in 19 where they took like five or six extra arms to each level. And they, for their first like X amount of starts, the starters would piggyback each other and then have a couple guys on the Phantom and do that whole number. And so I did that. I would piggyback and go on the Phantom, piggyback, go on the Phantom. I probably did that for the first like half of the season. Like, I remember, however many games there are or days there are in a season, I might have had like maybe 90 days on like actually being on the active roster. Like, I didn't pitch so much that when our team card set came out, I didn't get one. So they didn't have any pictures of me, and I had broke camp there and didn't get a card. And like, that's like one of like the funniest minor league stories that I have. And just like, all right, that's fine. But yeah,
is there fulfillment in that? Is there enjoyment in? Are you still like, I'm having fun, I'm minor leaguer, I'm getting to pitch and stuff like that. Is there still joy in the job when it's like that weirdly regimented?
No, there's not. It's not very enjoyable. I remember that and because I was like, I threw well, and but it was just a numbers game. I understood that I wasn't one of their guys. I mean, look at some of the guys that we had on that team, like Joe Adell, Brandon Marsh, Patrick Sandoval hasn't been in the big leagues up with them for a while. And like, I mean, there's probably been a good amount of guys that have made it to the big leagues with the Angels or elsewhere. That team is probably like, talent wise, one of the better teams that I played on. And so I get it. Like, I understood that I wasn't going to be getting those same opportunities, but I've known that my entire career at this point. But I figured if I could pitch my way out of that, like, then maybe I could turn the page and kind of be viewed a little bit differently. And finally, I think I did that. At some point, finally, I had done that. I had been pitching well enough where instead of being that piggyback guy and go on the Phantom regardless of how you pitch, I was able to get my own start day. So I think from like more towards like a greater part of the second half of that season, I was able to get my own start day. I was able to get into a routine the whole year. And I think the success is from there because you, like you said, you're able to develop that routine and you're able to kind of stay consistent with everything. And you know when you're throwing and you don't have to sit here and kind of check out every other week.
Question before we jump into the next year of your career, when you're getting shuffled, when you're like, you know, they're flying you out to rookie ball and then they're flying you back to extended or whatever, and they're doing all these things. And this is like, do you get to keep your miles? Like in the big leagues, do you get to keep your airline miles?
If you get miles in the big leagues, I haven't figured out how to do it yet. But in the minor leagues, yeah, you do. And I had a lot of them.
That's impressive because unless you're in AAA, it's actually hard to rack up miles in the minor leagues. So you might be an exception.
Yeah, I remember counting it, and I think in 2018 I had like somewhere close to 15 flights total throughout the entire season. And that's not like counting, you know, layovers. That's point A to point B.
And that's a quality year spent in the airport. That's a decent amount of miles.
Yeah. American Airlines really helped me out with that one. I got a lot of points on there.
At least they flew you American. And it's not like take this Frontier flight to rookie ball.
the Spirit Airlines cross country.
Hey, buddy, you're a good pitcher. You can fly this plane too.
You got to pay for your carry-on, though.
Oof. So you finish out this good year in Double A, like things are looking good. Like you're on the up and up, really, for the first time in your career. Like there's legitimate momentum. And then a pandemic happens, and then UCL starts to bark. So double whammy there.
Yeah.
When you hear UCL injury, that when we hear it as fans, it's like, okay, that guy's gone for 12 to 14. And we always think of that as a gimme, UCL. And it's like, oh, he's going to get a second opinion. That guy's going to have Tommy John. He's done. When it happens to you personally, what was your evaluation process? And how long was that before you realized you're not having Tommy John, you're doing something different? Walk me through that process. It's kind of a unique in terms of having a UCL injury, not having the reconstruction.
Yeah, it was weird. I felt it a little bit towards the end of December of that off season, and like at this point like in my career, this is the most important off season that I've had yet. I just had a good year in Double A as a starter, kind of proved this was really the first time in pro ball that I proved that I can be a quality starting pitcher. And so going into this off season, I'm like, all right, this is the off season. I got to go. I got to break camp in Salt Lake out of camp and put myself on the radar to be in Anaheim at some point. And all of a sudden my elbow starts barking a little bit, like you said, in December. But it wasn't like severe where I couldn't throw. It almost just felt like it wasn't so bad that I thought something was wrong, but it was, you know, I was like, I just kind of chalked it up to, you know, early in the off season, just now throwing. And because even throwing bullpens, I would feel like a little pull. But, it, you know, when you hear UCL injury, it's like, oh, your velo decreases, you can't throw a strike. And none of that was true. Didn't have any issues with that. So I didn't think anything of it, didn't say anything. Then all of a sudden, that first lot, like, within 4 or 5 days of getting to Arizona, my first live BP, I throw a pitch and I'm just like, this hurts. This is bad. And still didn't say anything because I almost got, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, but it was like, I'm having flashbacks at this point of spring of 2018, right? You say you're hurt, boom, you're gone. And so I don't want to do that again because I feel like at this point, I feel like I just kind of, you know, kind of graduated from the undrafted free agent process. And the thought, like, you know, just not being a little more invaluable than others. But then
you might actually be a prospect now. That's legitimate, like a legitimate.
Yeah, hope. Right, yeah. Like I have a chance to get there someday. But and the next day I'm playing catch at 75 feet and I can't make it there. And our pitching coordinator, Buddy Carlisle, was like, are you all right? I said, no, I'm not all right, buddy. So they go get me the MRI. And then at this point, it's like, this is the first time I actually feel like something's wrong. And then just to tell you how much I don't know about elbow injuries, I come in that, you got a grade 2 sprain. I'm like, oh, a sprain. That's okay. They're like, no. Like, it's torn. I said, but you said it was a sprain. Yeah, it's the same thing.
I've rolled my ankle before. This is fine.
Yeah, a sprained ankle and torn ankle are different. Why does it matter? What's the difference with the UCL?
We need to change the terminology if we're talking about this.
I felt like it was like the quickest change of emotions because I'm like, oh, a sprain, thank God. And then like, no, it's torn. I'm like, oh. And so, yeah. And like you said, pandemic comes around and the whole process of kind of try to, you know, bicker back and forth with the Angels about, do I need to get TJ right now? Can I try to rehab it? Or, you know, it kind of takes a little bit, right? Because it takes a little bit in spring training. There's so many guys there. There's so many guys that are, you know, hurt and have doctor's appointment here and they can't do it. Every team in Arizona is trying to see the same two or three doctors. So it takes a little bit. And at this point,
that's the James Andrews Super Bowl, really.
And then at this point, it was the point where you get the text that Rudy Gobert had tested positive for COVID-19. And seemingly within the next 12 hours, the entire world shut down. We had a meeting we got an email that night that said, hey, everybody's going to be going home tomorrow or the next day. Here's your flight. But still, we kind of thought, like everybody else in the world did, two weeks to slow the curve.
Yeah, two weeks and we're back. Golden. That's all we need.
Famous last words. but yeah, so everybody gets sent home and I'm trying to do the whole rehab. You don't really know if you're even allowed to go outside. People start looking at you weird. You can't go to the grocery store. People start shaming you if they see you out in public. But fortunately the gym,
in a way you kind of got like, hey, I can hide this injury. Like they're not going to be thinking about me right now. I can get through this without having to worry about it.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because they had way, way more stuff to worry about than my grade 2 sprained but not sprained elbow. So then the 2 weeks just keeps getting extended and extended and extended. It's like, I don't really know if we're even playing this year. And I don't know nobody knows what's going on. And then finally, I get to a point in my rehab in May at this point. So 2 months have gone by, and I'm throwing, and like, it's just not there. Like I'm getting the same feeling. And so finally I had the courage to actually, cause I didn't want to go say anything. Cause like I said, I'm having flashbacks the last time I got hurt and got released. Didn't want to do that again. PTSD. That was the word I was looking for earlier. Not really relatable, but that was what I was looking for. So I'm having that, and like, eventually I get the courage to call him. I tell him that I want surgery, But what the Angels doctor, he told me that it was this, you know, because I asked about the UCL repair, because I, as soon as you hear anything medical terminology, you Google it, right? Like everybody else. I Google it, and all of a sudden I see a different option, and I keep researching, and I kind of feel like this is the symptoms that I'm having. I kind of feel like I can get this. And so obviously I want to do what's ever shorter, what's easier. Duh.
It was a big theme of that summer, is doing your own medical research. So yeah. Glad you participated.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't the only one. Oh gosh. And then finally I was like, they wanted to send me out to California. I didn't want to do that either. I didn't want to go all the way out there, to be completely honest. Not just for surgery, but I just didn't want to go. Like, nothing about going to California and getting elbow surgery and then flying back with your elbow, you know, slung up, wrapped up 6 hours back to South Carolina. None of that sounds good. So I said, hey, the doctor who's doing the UCL, like, who's kind of first did the UCL repairs and is in Alabama. It's like an 8-hour drive. Can I just drive down there just to see? And so, yeah, they let me get my second opinion. I got down there and he told me I qualified for the repair and pretty much walked me through everything. And I decided that it was going to be more beneficial to do that than get the reconstruction. And so on June 25th of 2020, I got my UCL repaired with the internal brace. And on October 1st, I played catch for the first time, and I was on the mound in November.
Were you 100% in November? Like you threw a bullpen and you were letting it go like you had been?
No, my first bullpen was in November, so I still took it light. But the Red Sox came out to Columbia to watch me pitch in a bullpen in the middle of December, and I was full go. I was full go then. If not full go, definitely at least 90% ready.
So if you could do that all again, or you could advise, you know, you say you're in spring training this year and someone, you know, a non-40 man, you know, guy kind of in your shoes says, hey man, my elbow is killing me. Would you speak up, or would you have spoke up earlier? I mean, it obviously worked out in one way or another, but would you have stepped off the mound earlier? Would you have spoke up even with the risk? And it's hard to know what exactly would have happened, because a ton of minor leaguers got released just like you did by the Angels that year. I mean, just a ton of minor leaguers in general got released that summer because of COVID. But would you have gone about it differently if, you know, with that knowledge?
Yeah, I left that part out. Yeah, I told them that I wanted to get surgery, and then the next day I got released. That was fun. I thought they were called to schedule my surgery or schedule my appointment, but no, they say, yeah, we're going to let you go. But it's,
was hard. It still, was it paid for by the Angels though?
Or yeah.
Did,
yeah.
Did that,
yeah,
was that your Hale health insurance?
Yeah. They took care of it. Qualified as workers' comp. Thank God. I definitely couldn't pay it for it. but yeah, it's hard. Like you said, it's hard to say. It couldn't have worked out any better for me, obviously, because I didn't miss a single game, and I was able to pitch the entire 2021 season without – I still have yet to land, knock on wood, to land on the IL for an elbow injury, and I haven't really had any issues since. And it's really – so, like, your UCL, like, with the repairs, like, usually it's like you got the top, you got the middle, and you got the bottom. If it really usually, like from the research that I've done, that's not professional or that's not medical, so don't take it. But if it's in the middle, usually you don't really qualify for a repair. But if it's like at the top or the bottom and it kind of pulls off the bone, that's where you kind of get in that range of it's repairable. And so I definitely, if anybody is a candidate for it, 100%, absolutely. It's because you're not replacing anything. And so it's not like you have to sit there and just give it time to form, like, your new ligament to form in your body. You don't have to do that. It's already there. And it just takes, everything is just so much quicker. Like, you don't have to retrain your arm to bend. Like, I was able to fully extend my arm like a week after I got surgery. And It's the same exact rehab, but it's just a different time frame. Like, I think, I don't know, I think Tommy John's like 12 to 16 months, where this is 7 to 10, if that. I think I was back in like 6. Sorry, but like at the same time, like, I mean, did I rush my rehab a little bit? Maybe. I don't know. I probably wouldn't have done the rehab the exact same if the team would have done it as I was, because I'm getting surgery in June and I don't have a team to play for. Like, I can't just wait until February to be ready to go, because I don't have anywhere to go. So I was like, all right, I got to be done with this rehab by this date, so I have this amount of time to try to get back into baseball.
And you get picked up by the Red Sox. You spend, you know, 2021 split between Double A and Triple A. With the Sox, like, compared to, you start punching more guys out, you're walking guys less. I always like diving into this, like, where this comes from, because some guys develop something new, some guys just start taking a different approach. Sometimes it's just confidence. You've been in professional baseball for a long time, you know how to pitch guys a little bit better. You know, where do you think, like, the guy who pitched for the Red Sox was a lot better than the guy who pitched for the Angels, who was good? Where does that come from?
Well, I think part of, like, during my entire rehab, I can't throw. There's nothing, like, the, like we said, the world's shut down. There's nothing to do. I, like, really took that time to kind of dive in a little bit more to, like, mechanics and just kind of understanding how the, you know, the flow of energy works from the time you lift your leg to the time you throw the ball. And how, I didn't know anything about mechanics. I didn't know how to use my lower half or what, but how to be efficient with, like, rotating. So part of it is just kind of changing a little bit mechanically and trying to, you know, move my weight around a little bit better, more efficiently. But really, like, I remember my first bullpen of spring training, I throw, I'm like, oh, like, I'm getting a lot of swing and misses on my fastball. Like, I feel like it's coming out pretty good. And I remember it was 94, 96. I'm like, oh, I've never done this before. And, like, they say you get a velo jump out of surgery. I didn't really expect one because I didn't really get the quote unquote Tommy John. And to be honest, there wasn't really a lot of research out on it at the time. Like, full surgery to recovery. So, like, once I kind of realized I could throw a little bit hard, I just kind of looked at my whole career and, like, looked at the success I've had and kind of brought it, like, into three different points. It's like, and kind of made that my entire philosophy. I'm just like, in my opinion, if you can strike guys out, you can generate weak contact. And if you can keep the ball in the yard, good things are usually going to happen. And so, really, from the last two years, my personal philosophy is every guy that steps in the box, I want to strike him out. Is that the best way to do it? Probably not. But it's not like I'm sitting there trying to strike everybody out to where it's like, all right, I'm just going to try to rip the nastiest pitch that I can possibly rip. And I don't care where it goes, how much it moves. Like, that's not how I'm doing it. Like, when I try to think I want to strike this guy out, it's, first, I want to get ahead, and then I'm trying to mix pitches in any count and mix pitches in any zone. It's like, so over time, it's been a little bit easier just because I have the confidence to sit there and rip a 2-0 or a 3-0 changeup. And it's like, if you're ripping a 3-0 changeup, then a hitter's probably not looking for it and probably going to spit on it. So, like, if you can just land in there, you can essentially steal a strike. And just trying to almost, like, pitch backwards and, like, try to think back to my days as a hitter and think about what I'm expecting and what counts and trying to do the opposite. And so sometimes has it, like, benefited me? Sure. Has it, you know, bit me in the ass a little bit? Definitely. But so far, so good for the most part.
Yeah. And having that changeup as a reliever, often you'll see guys be fastball breaker. And that's a lot of times why guys transition to the bullpen in the first place. But having that change, if, you know, I don't know if you're a subscriber, but according to the 2023 Red Sox top 10 scouting report, you have the best changeup in the Sox system. Congratulations. You can hang that on your wall.
Thank you.
So you have this great year in 2021. You put yourself in position as an upper minor league, you know, bullpen guy. Those guys go high in the Rule 5 draft sometimes. They're appealing. Rule 5 draft gets canceled. You don't get put on the 40-man. Rule 5 gets canceled. No luck for you. You're going back to Boston as a non-roster invitee to spring training. You start putting in good numbers in AAA. The Red Sox not doing that hot in the big leagues. At some point, you've got to think, like, it's coming. Walk me through it.
Yeah. It was like a, yeah. Because, like, I thought with the year I had in 21, like, and, like, I mean, at this point, it's like I'm a reliever. I'm 26. I'm going in my age 27 year. It's like, you know, good relievers with numbers within the 27, teams usually give somebody a chance, you know? So I thought
they're like the perfect Rule 5 pick.
Yeah. It's like, if it works, great. If not, we'll just send you back. Who cares? So I thought I would have had a little bit, you know, of a decent shot to get taken in that, but it got canceled. And it's like, all right, at this point, you know, what are you going to do? Whatever. So was over that in about 5 minutes after I learned that it got canceled. And then really just tried to do the same thing that worked for me in 21. It was my first big league camp in 22, and probably didn't handle like I should have. I just kind of tried to do way too much, trying to do way too much to make the team, way too much to just kind of get noticed, I guess, because like in 21 the camps were split, right? So I didn't know anybody on the major league staff, not a single person, until camp of 22. And I think I walked somebody in every single outing I threw in, like in the like big league outings, backfield outings, live BPs, everything. Once I got to AAA, it's like, all right, now you can stop doing that. Now you can just pitch. And the first month of the season did not go well. I couldn't really throw a strike. And it's like, I got into like a mentality that I've never had before. It was like, this is really the first time that I've truly had to deal with failure. And like, have I had bad games? Sure. But like, this is just one after the other. And the year before, I'm throwing late innings, I'm throwing in high leverage situations, everything is great. But now it's like, oh, we're up by 10. Yeah, I'll come give you an inning. And it's just like, even in those situations, I still can't lock in. I still can't throw a strike. And just, it was so frustrating because all I felt like I needed was just one outing to regain confidence and to get back to where I was. And it just seemed like I couldn't do it.
Man, this couldn't sound less like the start of a season when you're going to make your big league debut.
Yeah, I know. And that
sounds like the start of a season where you get released in June.
That was like the frustrating thing. Cause I was like, gosh, I feel like I'm just so close. And like all I need to do is just put up a good season to AAA, and it's like just give me a chance. And like finally I turn it around. Finally I go on a streak of like I think like I don't know 10 like 9 10 11 games putting up zeros, and it's like the season keeps going on, and it's just like you know, just hanging out. There's a couple guys that were down here in AAA and we're just throwing the ball really well, and the big leagues, I feel like the big league team kind of got in the spot for a long time during that season where it's like, you know, they're not that close to the Yankees in the standings, but it's like it's not impossible, right? Like, they can easily go on a run and be right back in it. And especially with the AL East and the wild card now, it's like, essentially, more times than not, it's like your second and third place teams in the AL East are going to be in the hunt for the wild card. And so they're just in that spot for a long time. And certain guys were getting hot and they were putting up zeros consistently and nothing happened. And then finally, it's just we're in on August 28th. Yeah, August 28th. We're on the bus coming home from Syracuse, New York. And our manager called me up to the front and said, "Hey, man, congratulations. You're going to Minnesota tomorrow." And I'm like, "Oh, really?" And it was cool. And it was cool. This was, like I said, we were on the bus. All the guys that were on the bus were pumped for me and they were happy. And it was a surreal moment, just kind of, and like having, like being on a bus ride, it's like you have time to kind of understand what just happened, but it's not like if we're at home and I'm sitting there, it's like, all right, I'm going to the big leagues, got to pack and go and play, right? So I have just 6 hours of just sitting on a plane going through the, you know, the beautiful scenery of New York, upstate New York, and like almost just kind of flashing back at my entire career. It's like, you know, I had already viewed my career as a success. Being an undrafted free agent, there's zero expectations. Nobody, like, if you get out of Arizona, if you get out of Florida, like, you did what you were supposed to. Like, the team had a positive return on investment, and so every year I just felt like I was playing with house money. I understood that I was never going to be on a prospect list. I understood that I was never going to get the same opportunities that a lot of other guys were going to get. But I didn't use that to feel sorry for myself. I used it as motivation. And I feel like a lot of times you get into Pro Bowl and guys will start to view it as a job, which it is. But for me, having zero expectation from anybody other than myself, I'm still able to play the same game with the same joy and excitement as a kid as when I was 15 years old. I'm not sitting here trying to am I grateful that I'm being able to use this to provide for my family? Of course, that's the whole reason why I'm playing. But not having to have the feeling of like weighing over me of looking at professional baseball as a job versus just having fun playing a kid's game. I think that's been probably one of the biggest blessings of my career.
And I mean, in, you know, as someone who knows you, it was incredibly cool knowing what you had gone through to watch you walk onto that mound. It was nice that you made your debut against the Twins, because I was going to be watching anyway, so I didn't have to change up my own personal schedule. So that was good. That was good. You know, but with this show, a lot of the, you know, like I said, most everyone's hung it up. And at the end of this, we kind of do a look back. You are essentially just starting your career. Just starting the next level of your career, and that's a guy on the 40-man with big league time, which kind of changes things. You're, you know, about to go into your age 28 season. You pitched 13 2/3 innings in the big leagues. How much did you learn in just those 13 innings that you didn't know before you got there and can use to build on for what I'm sure you're hoping is going to be a successful age 28 season?
Yeah, a ton. Just seeing how, like, not even just learning like what to do in certain situations, but learning like how to analyze, like, because we, like, the amount of information that's available in the big leagues compared to any other level is just like, it's, there's the information just not there in the minor leagues, right? So being able to understand where certain guys' zones are, where your pitches play well, and actually like seeing it and being able to remember it when you get out on the mound is huge. Like, you don't, obviously you're not going to sit there and remember everything, but just learning how to pitch certain guys and how to pitch your way through certain at bats. when's a good time to double up on a pitch and when's a good time to go for the strikeout pitch. And just how to get ready every day. Cause in the minor leagues, there's so many guys. And this was probably the biggest thing for me. It was like, we had 12 or 13 guys in our bullpen in AAA on a 30, it's a 33 man roster. You take away seven guys for your 26 man in the big leagues, a lot of relievers and that aren't there anymore. And so, you know, being in AAA and you have that Tuesday to Sunday series, you throw on a Tuesday, maybe a Thursday and a Sunday, or even Tuesday, Friday for the entire week. You throw two or three times the entire week in AAA, and then the next week in Minnesota, I go back to back, and I go three out of my first four games in the big leagues. So that's something that I was used to. And it's just understanding how much more maintenance and how much more conditioning and training you have to do on a daily basis to be ready to go every night.
I've got a quick rapid fire for you, and then I'll let you get out of here.
All right, let's hear it.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
Pensacola.
Oh, that's a good one. Big league ballpark you're most excited to pitch in?
Atlanta.
You haven't yet.
Atlanta.
Oh, that's a guy from the South who grew up watching the Braves.
Ripper Jones.
Yeah. Best hitter you ever faced?
Aaron Judge.
Hitter you were most starstruck to face during your time, either in the big leagues or just in general, because I know you run into rehabbers and whatnot in the minors.
On the books, Aaron Judge. Off the books, Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, the king. Best Roanoke, Virginia food spot?
God, there's so many. I got a place like in Botetourt that I like. It's called Tap House, but it's not really Roanoke. If we're gonna go Roanoke, I'll go Jack Brown's Burger and Beer.
Oh yeah,
yeah, you can't go wrong there.
Yeah, love it. This is for like a dozen people who are gonna listen to this. What is your fondest memory of playing for the 2013 Roanoke Rails?
We had a guy, he got kicked out of a Waffle House one night. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I just know he got escorted out of the Waffle House. And you know, it's hard to do sometimes.
It's, you know, it's not hard. What? Whew. Can be done. Listen, folks, you can, I will say, due to recent events that we've seen on social media, it's possible to leave a Waffle House peacefully. You can't do it.
No, yeah. What a summer. What a summer.
I tell people, it was 2.5 months. It was like baseball that technically meant nothing. We were just playing a summer ball league. It was the most fun summer of my life.
The league, I don't even know if the league exists anymore, but they probably realized once the core group of the Roanoke Rails was gone. There's just nothing they could do anymore.
No, not nearly as fun without.
Fill the seats.
greatest show on turf, that club. Last one. Everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
Not a nightmare bus ride story, but I have a nightmare. Moving to a different level story.
Transportation story.
Yeah, I do have a nightmare transportation story. I got two that pop out. The one I'm not going to mention just ended up being a flight that my bags didn't get on, and I had to go to Dick's Sporting Goods the day of the game just to have cleats to wear that night. But that one's not as good. So
Did a Dick's employee be like, "Hey, sir, can I help you? Do you need to know any information about any of these cleats?"
My manager felt so bad that he gave me his credit card and just said, "Go get what you need." But so in 2019, I'm in Mobile. And this was my one high A outing of the season. We had a guy coming down from AAA to start, and so on Friday night they tell me I'm pitching on a Sunday. They tell me he's coming down. And then on Saturday rolls around, it's like, "Hey, he's going to start, but you're going to piggyback him now." And so I flipped to the back end of the piggyback, which is okay. That's fine. I get home from my apartment or to my the rental house that we had after the game on Saturday night, and they say, don't hate us, but hide the Inland Empire. They had a long game last night, and they need an arm for tomorrow. I said, don't do it to me. I mean, it's 11:30, and they're trying. I'm in Mobile, Alabama, and they're telling me that I have to pitch in Lake Elsinore, California, the next day. And so, so finally, I'm like, whatever. And it was such late notice that I had a flight at 6 a.m. not from Mobile, Alabama, but from Pensacola, Florida. So 4 a.m. 3 a.m. rolls around. It gave me an hour and 20 minute Uber ride from Mobile to Pensacola. Nobody wants to be in an Uber ride that long, and especially not at 3 in the morning. And no. So I get to Pensacola. It's 4. Flight leaves at 6. A couple delays in Dallas. Shocker. I get to Ontario, California. It's like a 3 o'clock first pitch. So not a night game. It's like a midday game on a Sunday. And by the time I get in the Uber ride from another hour from Ontario Airport in Cali to Lake Elsinore, it's like 1 o'clock, right? So I've been pretty much going all day. I haven't eaten. It was so bad that I had to have the Uber driver pull into a drive-through Jack in the Box. And I walk in there with Jack in the Box in my hand. And I get there, and I don't remember who it was. We have a rehab guy. I haven't even put my bags down yet. In our pitching coordinator, I was like, hey, he's waiting for you to go play catch outside. You need to hurry up and get changed and get out there. And I'm just like, look, I was in Alabama like 12 hours ago. I haven't slept. And so finally, like, that night rolls around, and then I don't have to go in. And then finally, like the seventh, they're like, yeah, we need you to eat a couple of innings. And we go into extra innings, of course. And I get so I had to throw in the extras. And I think I got the loss. I don't even think I gave up.
I have the line in front of me. You threw 4 innings, gave up 4 hits, 2 strikeouts, no walks, 1 run, unearned. Got the loss.
Yeah. And so just like that was it, man. Like, you know, I'm happy just chilling in I just got home after a Saturday game. I'm about to get in bed for a day game on Sunday in Alabama. And a couple hours later, I'm in Florida, and then I'm in California, and now I'm getting a loss.
How long until you went back to Mobile? Like, did they say you're going right back up to AA? Were you worried that they were going to leave you there?
No, they kind of threw me a bone a little bit. I was able to snake a Monday off day out there, and then they were able to throw me a bone, and I knew I wasn't going to pitch for a couple of days, and so they let me come home to surprise my now wife. She graduated from nursing school, so I got to pull the whole surprise there, and so it worked out. And then they flew me back to Mobile. So I got me a couple, like 3 or 4 days off as a thank you, which was all right.
I think this show started in 2019 or 2020, and that is, I think that might be the most bonkers travel story we've had. That is, man, cross country.
Yeah,
you think it'd just be cheap? Just let an outfielder pitch, like, or hey, go Johnny Allstaff or something.
Hey, that's what happens when you're a D2 undrafted free agent. You're this a lifelong fill-in guy for a little bit until eventually you start figuring it out a little bit better.
Well, buddy, now you're a big leaguer. I'm proud of you. I know everyone we played with is proud of you. Thank you so much for joining for Phenom to the Farm.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, dude. Good talking to you.
You got it. And that's it for today's episode with Zach Kelly. If you enjoyed it, please remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review if you're an Apple podcast, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.